Hi, Helen Hong.
Hi, J.K., how are you?
Very well. Great to talk with you. In today's episode, we've got Walter Koenig versus Danielle Koenig. Now, we recorded this episode last year, but we wanted to hold it until now because Walter has a new book out, and it's released today.
It's called Beaming Up and Getting Off: Life Before and Beyond Star Trek. You can get a signed copy through jacobsbrownmediagroup.com or get an unsigned copy wherever fine books are sold.
I love fine books. Those are my favorite. Now, we're excited to bring you this episode, everybody, not just because it features our first father versus daughter competition, but because it's our first new episode in over 2 months that features a live audience.
Oh, I remember live audiences.
I know, they applaud and they woot, and sometimes they boo me when I don't know things about Star Trek. But I still love them.
You know what? I feel like all my career I've been taking live audiences for granted, and I never will again.
Never. And speaking of live audience, we have a very special announcement to make. Helen, tell everybody.
We are recording an episode that you can watch live on Tuesday, May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time. That's 5-5 at 5. For the first time ever, we're live streaming on video a podcast recording.
And we've got two very special guests from the NPR hit podcast Ask Me Another, host Ophira Eisenberg, and from the hit NPR podcast Ask Me Another, musician and co-host Jonathan Colton.
This is being brought to you by NPR station KPCC and LAist. To watch the recording, go to our website, gofactyourpod.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/gofactyourpod, and look for the link. Click through to KPCC's page and RSVP, and you'll get a reminder 30 minutes before the show starts.
That's right. Now, you can watch it either on KPCC's site or on Facebook or at livestream.com. You don't have to have a Facebook account or any other account to watch.
And please tell everybody, if you like our show,
everybody.
I mean literally everybody, please
yes.
spread the word. I mean, it's not like anyone is busy right now. So watch together and enjoy Tuesday, May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific.
And don't worry, if you do miss the live video feed, you can hear the audio from the episode in our podcast feed like normal. Hey, Helen, remember normal?
No, I don't even anymore.
Well, this episode that you're about to listen to might remind you of that because this episode was recorded during the more normal times.
Oh, yeah, more normal times. We recorded this episode last year, so when you hear us say 2018 was last year, that was true at the time. We'll have another time-related update at the end of the show that we don't want to spoil for you right now.
And now, without any further ado, here's episode 58 of Go Fact Yourself. Helen from the past, take it away.
Are you a real know-it-all? Do you annoy your family by shouting the answers while watching Jeopardy? Do you drive people crazy when you start a sentence with, well, actually? Well, guess what? You can go fact yourself! Hey! Hi, everyone. Welcome to Go Fact Yourself, the show where we take the smartest people we know and make them look dumb. And then smart again. I'm Helen Hong. And now from the Angel City Brewery in downtown Los Angeles, here's our moderator, J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you, everybody. Helen, wonderful to see you. How are you?
I'm very, very well.
Now, you must be especially excited because I know you to be a fan of Star Trek.
Huge.
And one of our guests today, I'm not sure which, but one of our guests was on the original cast of Star Trek. Yes.
I had to really check myself from acting wildly inappropriately.
Now, funny contrast, I have never seen an episode of Star Trek.
See, this is one of the things that just makes me go, how are we hosting a
but
podcast
That's what
together?
You call diversity.
How is that possible, Jakey?
Well, here's the thing. People assumed, as I was growing up, that I had seen many episodes of Star Trek because I was, I believe, what they called back then, a nerd.
A nerd.
Yeah, so I had all of the trappings of a Trekkie, except for actually having watched the program.
Well, now, were you more into Star Wars?
No, I didn't like things that took place in space.
I'm leaving.
Okay. Helen, we had a good run, didn't
my
we?
I didn't space, like space is my happy place.
Yeah.
Space okay. is my happy place.
I do not begrudge people who enjoy the space things. I had many friends who were into the various treks and wars of space and whatnot. I liked Weird Al. Okay, a little bit.
I have the opposite opposite problem. I think a lot of people assume that I'm not a sci-fi nerd, and right. I am a raging sci-fi nerd. I love Trek. I love Wars. I love anything that takes place in space. I am like on board for it. I think because I had an awkward childhood. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you have an awkward childhood and you have a hard time fitting in, like in high school and middle school and stuff, that's you start fantasizing about like where else could I be where I...
No, I'm on board with all that so far.
Yeah,
that definitely, you know, we're both in comedy. So yeah, we both definitely had that.
But I think it's weird that for you, it was Weird Al.
Yeah.
Like you wanted to be Weird Al or you wanted to...
I just wanted to laugh. So I wouldn't cry?
Oh, no, I just wanted to be like, peace out, Earth.
Yeah.
And
I didn't have that in my vocabulary for some reason as a young child.
I just wanted to be like literally millions of miles, preferably, away from all the horrible people in high school, I guess.
Yeah. I definitely, again, wanted that, but I didn't imagine that would take place in space.
This became so cheerful.
It did. Hey, let's talk about something we both enjoy. Today on Go Fact Yourself, two guests will compete to answer questions about facts they know, facts they might not know, and frankly, facts they should know. Plus, we'll meet actual experts on two very different topics. And finally, we'll declare one of our guests the winner of today's show. Let's get started and meet today's guest, Helen, who is up first.
She is a comedian and writer who's written for comedy shows like The Dish, game shows like Common Knowledge, and animated series like Invader Zim. It's Danielle Koenig.
Danielle Koenig.
Welcome, Danielle.
Yes. Thank you.
Danielle, it says here in my notes that you and I have known each other for decades and have shared the stage many times.
We were in Acme Comedy Theater together where we met.
Yes.
And did lots of sketches.
Yes.
And put on funny wigs.
Yes, there were a lot of funny. I always felt either the performance or the wig should be funny.
Yes, and wigs are expensive, so you better...
Try
to
be
to write.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Now, eagle-eared listeners will recognize that you were here at our first show because you were in the audience, and your husband Jimmy Pardo was our guest on the first show, and we asked him, I believe, for his cluster fact, a question that you suddenly realized the answer to in a very loud, gaspy manner. Which we love. We love celebrating knowledge here.
I thought you were going to say we could hear your obnoxious laugh.
No, not at all.
That's what I usually get.
No, okay. No. No laughs are obnoxious in my book.
Oh, I've been admonished for my laugh.
Really?
What? Yes.
By whom and in what context?
Well, once I was on an airplane laughing with my friend. We were on a flight, and the guy in front of me turned around, and he said, "Could you just be quiet, you girls, with that laugh, with that machine gun laugh?"
Oh, yeah. No. Directed what did you say right back?
No, I think what I said was, she has marijuana in her shoe, which was true. But
why did you want to narc your friend out?
Because it wasn't fair that I was getting in trouble for my laugh.
Oh, I see. She was laughing because she had the marijuana.
No. The two are unrelated. I just was mad that I was getting in trouble for my laugh.
I think you should let your freak laugh fly.
Yeah.
I have no choice.
Let's talk about some of your writing credits. Aside from the ones that Helen had mentioned, you also had written on Star versus Forces of Evil.
Yes.
You've written for the WGA Awards, for Fashion Police, for Invader Zim, the TV show, and the comic.
Yes.
That's all very impressive and fun.
Yeah. Did you work with Joan Rivers?
Well, I did work with Joan Rivers.
On Fashion Police.
I did.
Yes. What was that like?
I mean, it was crazy. It was a ridiculous job. Because
yeah.
we would sit around the table, pitch jokes for like an hour. Like we each had 10 jokes on the same picture. Then she would never laugh. She would just nod or not say anything. Then you'd get home and you'd get a phone call saying, "Okay, we need 20 more jokes on that picture."
Damn.
It was tough. It's not all laughs and giggles.
It was all right. It was kind of neat to work with a legend, regardless.
Yeah, I'm sure she felt the same way.
For sure.
Now, on Invader Zim, I told people that we were having on the show, and they said, "Oh, yeah, you know, she wrote Invader Zim."
Aww.
Audible gasps. I got audible gasps from people. It's a really beloved show. People really love and remember that show.
I love it as well.
How is it different writing the cartoon version of it versus the comic book version of it?
There actually wasn't that much difference.
Oh, okay.
When we wrote the comics, when they sent me the, you know, the format, this is how we do it, it's just like a script.
Mm-hmm.
So it really wasn't very different. And I'm not an extremely visual person, so I didn't detail every single panel. I would just let the artists do that because they're talented at that and I'm not really. Mm-hmm. So, but it really wasn't that different, except it had been a long time.
What was the time in between?
I mean, the show was on in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
It was canceled because of 9/11. Yay!
Really?
Yeah, that's just sort of the magic I bring to every... they thought the show was too dark. They always thought that Nickelodeon, it just was in the wrong place. The show should not have been on Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon was, you know, SpongeBob.
Right.
And then it was our show that was about death and destruction and dark colors and dark music. And then they thought well, you know, the world's just been turned upside down. Maybe we shouldn't continue this.
Okay, so it wasn't because they had, like, you know, 24-hour news coverage or something all of a sudden.
No, no, Nickelodeon running. Yeah. They just thought, yeah, this is probably a good time to drop the show that gives us a headache anyway. So, yeah.
Now, we have to talk about the fact that you're going to be appearing tonight with your father, who, of course, was on Star Trek. I assume you must be a huge Star Trek fan.
I've seen all the movies.
Okay. But do people assume, like they assumed about me growing up, but for different reasons, that you were a big Trekkie?
Probably, yeah. Yeah. I've not seen every episode, even.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did kids treat you different when they found out that your dad was on Star Trek?
Occasionally. There was, you know, occasionally there was attention. But you have to understand that by the time I was, you know, a kid, the show had already been off the air. It was before the movies.
Oh, okay.
So there wasn't, like, it wasn't that exciting.
You know, both of your blasé attitudes towards Star Trek is literally making me want to flip a table and go put on my Federation uniform and beam on up out of here.
Now, I want to explain. I am not anti-Star Trek. It just doesn't move me particularly.
No, I mean, I enjoy very much the movies. I just, for some reason, didn't get that into the TV show.
Okay.
That's
Helen, can you accept that?
Ugh.
Okay, well.
I started rewatching them with my son. My son and I did watch some episodes.
And dare I ask, I don't want to have your son have to face Helen's wrath. Did your son enjoy watching Star Trek?
Yeah.
Oh, thank goodness.
Oh, thank God.
The famous quote is that he said, there was the episode Trouble with Tribbles where
iconic.
Chekhov gets all mad. He's drinking vodka or something and he gets all mad and they get into a fight and he like hops on a table and Oliver, who was, what, like 8 at the time or something, said, I can't believe my grandpa's a table-jumping maniac. So,
I said the same thing about my grandpa, but it was an entirely different situation.
Right.
It's wonderful to be on stage with you again and to have you here. Danielle Koenig, ladies and gentlemen. Helen, against whom will Danielle be competing?
He is a prolific writer whose book Warped Factors is being re-released with new material, and a prolific actor who is best known for his roles on Babylon 5 and as Chekhov on Star Trek, the original series, it's Walter Koenig!
Walter Koenig, ladies and gentlemen! Hello, Walter. Oh, I think Walter came to play. He's a little bit of a threatening gesture towards his competitor.
Jesus.
Welcome, Walter.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
We're very glad to have you. Well, have you all appeared on stage together previously?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I was a little embarrassed about appearing on stage with Danielle.
Why would that be?
Well, you know, there's a certain level of talent that I expect from the people.
Wow. But you did write a movie that Danielle had a part in, didn't you?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, she wrote the dialogue for herself.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And she was very funny. She was about, 5 months pregnant at the time?
Yeah, actually, I was.
Yeah. And it was a scene in which a comedian was on television, and they were watching her on television. And so she got up and she did a stand-up, and she wrote all her own material. It was very funny. Yeah.
And that's why my son appreciates Star Trek.
Because of that. Well,
can you believe the blasé attitude that these two have?
You know what's so funny is when you said earlier, I can't believe the blasé attitude you two have, I really thought you were referring to me and my dad. You're sort of blasé about Star Trek, right?
Well, now, Walter,
take it or leave it.
Walter, that's actually a question I have is, when you encounter someone who doesn't know a lot about Star Trek, is that a relief or pleasure for you, or is that more annoying because you want to talk about it?
You know, the fact of the matter is, I actually, particularly now as I grow older and as more time has elapsed between when I was performing as Chekhov and the present day, I'm occasionally surprised. When somebody's very smiley and hi, I think that they like me. And it's a fact that I suddenly realized, they're actually remembering me from Star Trek.
Mm. That's still got to feel nice that they remember your work, that you made an indelible
impression. That's good. I still make personal appearances, and it's important that people know who I am. And when they walk by the table to the 15-year-old kid who's a computer genius and is playing games, and his is the autograph that they want, you know. That's a little disconcerting.
Mm. Well, let me ask you about your book. You are reissuing the book, and first of all, I wanted to say you actually wrote this book, unlike some other Star Trek people who I won't name, who do not write their own books. Why did you want to re-release it?
Well, I was approached by a publishing company who kind of specializes in science fiction, and they have actually there's several volumes that they published on the making of Star Trek and the series and mm-hmm. the TV series called These Are the Voyages, mm-hmm. and it's not only a republish; it's also an addendum. Mm-hmm. It's, the book was published in 1997. So this is the last 21, 22 years.
Yeah. I'm sorry to ask. What's some of the new material that you've added to it?
Well, everything that's happened to me during this period since 1997. I still had 1 year to go on Babylon 5, so I started the book with that. And then I went on to talk about how life has affected me as a consequence of my participation in Star Trek and how it truly is. You know, it's one of those things where you go through denial, and then you go through acceptance, and then you go through actually revelating in the experience, and how it's really insinuated every aspect of my life. Mm. And there's no purpose in denying it. You know, there was a juncture, there was a moment when since I wasn't doing it, it felt like false applause.
Sort of imposter syndrome.
A laudatory response from an audience that I didn't deserve because right. I was no longer working on the show.
Well, I've read the addendum, and it's really good. It's okay. Very funny, and it's really entertaining.
That's right. It's interesting to see how that's changed over the years for you, Walter, that you've sort of come to terms with it, maybe, it sounds
yes,
like.
Yes, I think I have. At the age of 83, I think I have.
Terrific.
I do want to say that, you know, your series was so groundbreaking for people of color, and even for women, even though there's a lot of things about it now that are, from a feminist perspective, a little bit problematic. But for me, growing up, I grew up watching TNG and some of TOS in the reruns in syndication. And for me, it was like the only time you would see Asian people on TV that weren't doing kung fu or had an accent. And so for me, it was so groundbreaking as a child, you know, being on, watching people who look like me on TV that were not playing a caricature. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure.
We certainly appreciate your being here. Thank you so much. Walter Koenig, ladies
Thank
and gentlemen.
You.
No, not over. No, no. Now the game part starts. Yeah. No, please have us. Wait, do you have time to stay? Audience, do you think we can get him to stay? Talk about applause you don't deserve.
My objective here
yes.
tonight, solely and wholly,
yes.
is to embarrass my daughter.
Well, mission accomplished. All right, Walter and Danielle, we're happy to have you here. We asked each of you to provide us with a few topics outside your field of work in which you feel you some expertise. Danielle, you said you know a lot about dance moves, the Muppets, and the movie Modern Romance.
Yes.
Walter, you said you know a lot about Golden Age superheroes, the New York Yankees baseball teams of the 1950s, and the singer Pete Seeger. So later on, we're going to ask each of you some in-depth trivia questions about one of those topics. But first, we're going to get your thoughts on something you might know nothing about. It's time to split some hairs with our What's the Difference round. We'll have one question for each of you, each worth up to 2 points. If either of you gives an incorrect answer, the other person has a chance to steal. Your topic today, the bumpy road. First up in the bumpy road, Danielle. Danielle, your question comes from a listener, Charlie Green of Cortland, New York. Listeners, if you'd like to submit a suggestion for a What's the Difference round, go to gofactorpod.com and click on Get Involved. Danielle, in the topic of bumpy road, they both are pathways that can be bumpy, but what is the difference between a road and a street? A road and a street.
I also have written on many game shows, mm-hmm. so I should know this.
This is a common question on game shows? You're saying we've plagiarized from...
No, I'm just saying it's dull enough to have been on something I've written. No.
What an honor that must be for Charlie Green of Cortland, New York.
A road is smaller.
A road is smaller.
Yeah, it's a shorter distance.
It's shorter in that way, not necessarily wider or narrower. It's shorter distance.
No, it's a shorter distance.
It's a shorter distance.
Sure.
Okay. Okay, we have Danielle's answer. We don't know yet if she's correct. Walter, what do you think?
Well, a street is where you live, and a road is to perdition.
Is to perdition. That certainly is a reference that includes the word road. I will agree. Would you like to amend your answer? Or
oh, no.
You're sticking
good,
with that.
I feel very, very confident.
All right. This is going to be a high-scoring affair tonight. All right. This segment has driven off into a ditch. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Here are the facts. While people who name streets and roads are allowed to call them anything they want, the traditional differences are a street is usually in an urban area and has businesses or homes on either side. A road is usually in a rural area and connects urban areas and will have open space on either side.
That's right. Now, that is, of course, why John Denver didn't sing Take Me Home Country Street, and Bruce Springsteen didn't sing about the roads of Philadelphia. Helen, what does that mean as far as our score is concerned?
I'm going to say 0 points.
I'm going to say that as well. Yeah. Still a valiant attempt by at least one of you. All right, up next in the bumpy road, Walter. Walter, they both hinder you from getting from here to there, but what is the difference between a speed bump and a speed hump? A speed bump and a speed hump. Danielle seems to be worried about the possible jokes her father could make from the word hump.
I get it. Yes, a speed bump is, in the road, there is a built-up area that is there for the purpose of slowing you down.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, your car will shake. And whereas a speed hump is, your car also shakes, but that's because there's two people inside.
Danielle, your greatest fears have been realized.
I mean,
I love
Walter,
this.
Are you sticking with that answer?
I am.
By the way, I'm loving it.
Yeah. Danielle, technically we don't know yet if he is correct or not.
Yeah.
What
no,
do you think?
This is killing me because this really was a question I wrote and I cannot remember. I'm going to say the height. The height between the speed bump and the speed, they're two different heights.
Is one one taller than the other?
Yeah, that would be the height difference.
Danielle gives good shade face.
Rephrase,
which one is higher than the other? Okay, I'm going to say the hump is higher.
The hump is higher. That's my motto. All right, well, this segment is slowing us down. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Here are the facts. Speed humps have a gradual rise and a fairly long travel distance, meaning that a car gently rides up and down. I said rides up and down. You'll commonly find these on residential streets. Speed bumps have a sudden rise and a very short travel distance, meaning that a car abruptly jolts if it doesn't slow down. You'll commonly find these in parking lots where you need to go much more slowly. There are also speed tables, which have long flat tops, like Kid from Kid and Play.
Thank you, Helen. That, of course, is right. The height actually can be the same between the two, so that is not a difference. By the way, in many parts of the world, speed bumps are called sleeping policemen, though I've seen policemen sleep, and they do not like being run over. Lesson learned. Helen, what does that mean as far as our score is concerned?
After the first round, Danielle Koenig has 0 points, and Walter Koenig also has 0 points.
You could not ask for a closer game. Those scores are hopefully bound to change as we move on to questions about topics our guests have chosen for themselves. That's all up ahead when we come back on Go Fact Yourself.
Hey everybody, Maximum Fun is running a survey to help figure out which advertisers are a good fit for our audience at Go Fact Yourself.
We are still primarily audience-supported, and that will always be the case, but advertising can be a helpful source of income, especially right now.
For sure. Now, the results of the survey will help us talk to some new advertisers and convince them to give us a shot.
The survey is short, shouldn't take more than 10 minutes, and you'll get a discount at the Max Fun store for filling it out. Also, our gratitude.
So much gratitude. Go to MaximumFun.org/adsurvey to fill it out. Helen, what's that website again?
MaximumFun.org/adsurvey.
It'll really help us out. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself, where our score is Danielle Koenig with 0 points and Walter Koenig with 0 points. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. Thanks, everybody. By the way, I can see the family resemblance in your scores.
I know, right? It's hereditary.
Danielle, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about dance moves, the Muppets, and the movie Modern Romance. Let's find out a little bit more about each of those. First, you said you know a lot about dance moves.
Okay. So I studied ballet from the age of 5 to
whatever. And so I know those kind of dance moves. I also know some names of other dance moves. I love dance. I love dance in all its forms. I take a class called Old School Skinny on Saturdays, which is like 90s hip hop.
What is your favorite 90s hip hop dance move?
Oh, I guess, you know, the Roger Rabbit, you know, gotta go classic.
Classic. You also said you know a lot about the Muppets.
Thanks for asking, Keith. I do. I grew up with the Muppets, and I've passed love of the Muppets on to my son. We have gone to see the Muppet movie at a movie theater recently. We went to an exhibit at the Skirball. We are very into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And what is it about the Muppets that appeals to you, do you think?
It's that combination of sweetness and, I hate the word subversive because that's so cliche, but that's kind of what it was. It was very, like, weird and sometimes kind of violent in a funny way, which yeah. I like.
All right,
you mean
great.
Like Star Trek?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, Ellen. Yeah. Everything's like Star Trek.
Yes.
You also said you know a lot about the movie Modern Romance.
I just think it's a perfect movie. It's one of my favorites.
Same
I know
here.
You wrote your... Didn't you write your dissertation or something on... Not dissertation,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, very, very
word.
Good. Yes, I took. Okay. I designed my own college course on Albert Brooks movies.
Yes. See, if I knew I could have done that, I would have stayed in college.
oh, white people.
Helen, it's just like Star Trek.
She could have just said Jewish people,
that's
right? Wouldn't that have been fine? Yeah, so I just, I think he's a genius, and it's just one of those movies not a lot of people know about, but then when you show them, they're like, oh my God, that movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Vietnam, this.
Yeah.
Okay, that's one of my favorite lines.
Right.
All right, so to summarize, Danielle, you said you know a lot about dance moves, the Muppets, and the movie Modern Romance. Today we want to quiz you about the Muppets. You seem relieved by that.
Well, I was scared it was going to be dance moves.
That would have been great to demonstrate on a podcast, I'm sure.
I had visions.
Yeah. What's your first memory of the Muppets?
Just the TV show, The Muppet Show. That's my first memory of just watching that and just loving it, and I couldn't wait for it to be on.
Mm.
And I had Muppet lunchboxes the whole
time. I was going to ask, yeah. So were you a collector, and are you a collector of Muppet memorabilia now?
I'm not a collector. I did have some lunchboxes when it was the appropriate age to, and then they were stolen. And
what?
Then... Yeah, you know, at school, just jerks.
No.
Yeah.
It's always those jerks.
Well, I think one was stolen and one just rusted out or something. But then I have two lunch boxes now. I don't even remember where I got them, but yeah.
Oh, lovely.
So,
and there have been many Muppet movies. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, that's hard.
Among
the first
favorites.
Three are very good. Mm-hmm. The Great Muppet Caper, The Muppet Movie, and Muppets Take Manhattan. Mm-hmm. But also Muppets Most Wanted is actually really good,
okay.
Which is the more recent.
Excellent. And do you have a favorite character in the Muppet sphere?
I guess Fozzie.
Fozzie's pretty great.
Fozzie's so good. He's just a bad stand-up comic.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know.
Did you learn a lot of techniques from him?
Sadly, yes.
Yes, yes. You begin and end your set saying waka, waka, waka.
I did, yeah.
I always appreciated that.
Waka!
That's right. And the necktie with no other clothes.
Yes.
All right, well, just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in the Muppets to test your mastery in the subject with an expert-level question worth up to 3 points. But before that, to let you show your love, here are 5 questions about your topic.
I'm so nervous.
Oh, this is all happy and celebrating.
I know, okay.
It's the Muppets. How can it make you anxious? Oh, Jewish. You're right, Tom.
Right.
If you want it, you're allowed to hint for any 2 of these 5
questions. Oh, right, okay.
Now, Walter, do listen up, because if Danielle gets any wrong, you have a chance to steal. By the way, Walter, how much do you know about the Muppets?
I know absolutely nothing.
All right, well, Danielle, it sounds like it's your game to lose. Here we go. Question number 1. Which Muppet is the only amphibian American to ever testify before the United States Congress?
Kermit.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Wouldn't that be something if it weren't?
It was Robin. So sad.
In 2008, Kermit and a team of conservationists spoke to Congress to promote awareness of endangered amphibians. Very good. You're on the board.
Wow.
Here's question number 2. The Muppet Show's opening theme is a huge production number with dozens of Muppets performing on stage. In the later seasons of the show, there are also Muppets in the audience who reply to a line in the theme song with a line of their own. What line of the song does the audience sing?
Why don't you get things started?
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. The line they are responding to is, it's time to get things started.
Why don't you get things started?
Hey, we did it!
Fun.
You're 2 for 2. Here's question number 3. Which Muppet, who appeared in dozens of episodes of The Muppet Show and in almost every Muppet movie, has an act that involves throwing boomerang fish?
That would be Lou Zealand.
Helen?
That is correct.
With confidence and for good reason. How did you feel about Lou Zealand? He always bothers me a little bit.
Well, he sort of sort of disturbing to look at, but
yeah. And also the whole thing of like, here's a dirty fish
it's
that
so
came
gross.
Back. Yeah.
Wait, he just throws a fish.
Yeah, he just throws a fish.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. It's just like so ridiculous.
It's so weird. Yeah.
It's so stupid. Yeah. I don't
Did they have fish throwers on Star Trek, Helen?
Not that I remember.
Question number four: The Muppets theatrical films are marked by cameos from a wide range of stars, but which of the following stars has not made a cameo in a theatrically released Muppet movie? Orson Welles, Joan Rivers, Hulk Hogan, Burt Reynolds, Peter Falk, or Usher?
Orson Welles was in the first one, mm-hmm. the Muppet movie. Joan Rivers was in Muppets Take Manhattan. Usher, I'm guessing, was in The Muppets. And what were the other two?
We had Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan.
Burt Reynolds. And Peter Falk.
And Peter Falk was in the Great Muppet Caper.
Okay.
So I'm gonna say Hulk Hogan.
Would you like to use your first hand?
Sure.
Hulk Hogan was in a Muppets movie.
That's my hint, the answer?
No, because we're asking for who was not in a Muppets movie.
Yeah, okay, so Burt Reynolds.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct.
What movie was Hulk Hogan in?
Girl, that was a great hint.
Hulk Hogan was in Muppets from Space, playing Hollywood.
Oh,
Hollywood
we don't talk
Hogan.
About that one.
All right, very good. You're 4 for 4. You have a chance to go 5 for 5, okay. Danielle. The first Muppet to be a regular on a network TV series was Ralph the Dog, who appeared as a sidekick on nearly every episode of what Country Stars 1960s variety show?
Jimmy Dean.
Helen?
That is correct.
Danielle Koenig is 5 for 5. And you were nervous going into it. Fun fact, before he became a sausage entrepreneur, Jimmy Dean was offered a 40% stake in the Muppets, but he turned it down because he said he didn't earn it and couldn't live with himself if he took it.
Wow.
Jimmy Dean.
I know.
Jimmy
People
Dean.
In Hollywood used to have integrity.
Aww.
You did very well, obviously, in that round, Danielle, but now here is your expert level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact.
Okay.
We'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. Everyone loves the wonderful performances by the Muppet characters and actors, but without writers, there would be nothing for them to say and do. There have been 8 feature-length theatrically released Muppet movies from 1976 to 2014. They have a total of 14 credited screenwriters. For up to 3 points, name any 3 of those 14 writers.
Jerry Jewell, Jason Segel. I know Jim Henson didn't write them, which is weird. And I'm pretty sure Frank Oz didn't write anything. Lou Grade was the producer. I'm going to say Lou Grade. I don't think it's right.
Lou Grade. All right. Helen is taking note of your answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Here with us tonight is an Emmy-winning writer, producer, director, designer, and puppeteer who has worked with the Muppets for over 30 years and who is one of the writers of Muppet Treasure Island. It's Kirk Thatcher.
Kirk Thatcher.
Wow.
Mr. Thatcher, wearing a captain's hat, I believe a Star Trek communicator.
Yeah.
Is that what you would
yes.
call it, Helen?
Yes.
I'm a twofer.
You are. Well, before we get to talking about
Wait,
the Muppets.
Can I ask him a question?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Were you on Jim Henson's Creature Shop Challenge?
Yeah, I was one of the judges.
Yes, of course.
I was
okay,
the pretty one.
Yeah. Watched it all. Very exciting.
Oh, excellent. Nice to meet
you. Yes, we definitely have a very qualified expert. Before we get to talking about the Muppets, I want to mention that you actually have a connection to Walter and to the Star Trek universe. Tell us about that.
I worked on Star Trek 2 and 3. I was associate producer and the punk on the bus in Star Trek 4.
No way! What?
And Walter was my favorite actor to hang out with on set because he was funny.
Aww.
You would do shtick, and you know, until Leonard told us to shut up. But we would have fun, man. You were hilarious.
So despite the fact that I'm failing miserably here, we know that I can be funny on occasion.
Yes.
You also have an entire topic of questions coming up. In addition to being the on screen as the punk in that very memorable scene from Star Trek 4, you actually were the one who had written and was performing the song.
I wrote and sang the song, yeah. And
no way.
I actually was the voice of the computer in the beginning. Who said logic? That's me. I wrote those questions. I did a lot on the movie. In fact, the producer said, we can't give you credit for everything because your name will be in the picture more than Leonard's. And that's a no-no.
Okay, I'll give you a bit of nostalgia.
Please.
Yeah.
For those in our listening audience,
got
this is another reason you have to come to the live shows.
Oh my God, I gotta go change my
my pants.
Yes, I believe Walter just gave what I believe is called the Vulcan death grip.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. See, I know a few things. Still never seen an
episode. Nerve pinch. It's
nerve
not
pinch.
A death.
Excuse
yeah.
me. Yes, our audience.
The
please,
punk did not
down.
Die. In fact, the yes. punk lived on to be a cameo in Spider-Man.
I was going to ask you Homecoming. About that as well. Yeah, so yeah. that was the same character you were playing many that, years later.
And that's due to Kevin Feige being a huge Trek fan.
That's terrific.
Now, see how the world gets smaller and smaller.
Absolutely. Now, in addition to the Star Trek world, you did a lot of other things first in the science fiction world because you worked at ILM.
Yeah.
Industrial Light and Magic. That was actually your first gig?
My first gig, yeah, was Return of the Jedi, building creatures with Phil Tippett. And then
stop
I went...
Stop it.
Okay.
No, Tippett. Tippett. Sorry.
Ooh, clever. I need more coffee. Yeah, working with Phil Tippett and the Creature Gang on Jedi, and then I worked on Gremlins with Chris Wallace, and I did some work on E.T. I actually did work on Star Trek 2 and 3. I puppeteered the Klingon dog that was underneath. I was crammed under the chair of Chris Lloyd's chair on the ship there doing
the
this.
The glamour never ends in Hollywood.
Yeah, I know. I was covered in slime with the slime worms that started on the Genesis planet when, so lots of weird, odd jobs.
That's terrific.
I have career ADHD.
Well, you've stuck with it for a long time and done some great work. Tell us about how you first got involved with the Muppets.
I'd done Star Trek 4, and a woman who was a headhunter for a special effects company, Robert Abel and Associates, had joined with another company, Omnibus, and they came Omnibus Abel. She'd become a friend, and her husband, her name's B.J. Rack, and her ex-husband was Bill Frawley, who directed, Jim Frawley, who directed the first Muppet movie. Mm-hmm. And I had created some weird, funny alien puppet creatures. I was trying to do a show around them. And she said, you know, who would love this is Jim Henson. I said, yeah, you know, big fan. I'd never met him. I'd worked with people on Jedi who had just come off Dark Crystal. So obviously I knew what he was doing with creatures and all that. And I said, well, I'll broker a meeting. And I said, great. So I met Jim at, he was staying at the Bel Air Hotel. And we had lunch, and I brought a bunch of drawings and these sculptures, and we just hit it off. And about 2 weeks later, actually, funny story, my mom answers the phone because I was living at home at that time because Star Trek didn't pay well, but I didn't turn it down. It was a great job, but it paid so little I had to move back in with my parents. So my mom answers the phone, and she thought a friend was goofing on me because I have goofy friends going, hi there, is he a Kirk Thatcher there? And my mom's like, oh, yes, he is. She was like playing along like it was a friend goofing. And she's like, I'll tell him it's Jim Henson. And she's like, okay, Mr. Jim, you know. So I get to the phone. She's like, hey, Kirk. And so we talked. She said, oh. And my mom was, you know, Betty Crocker, like June Cleaver. So so offended. She was so embarrassed that she had kind of been arch with him. But anyway, so he called me, and I started working with him. And that was 1986.
Wow.
87, yeah, a long
and,
time.
And since then, you've directed 4 of the Muppets TV movies. You've done countless commercials, music videos. How do you direct Muppets? As a director.
It's funny, I'm giving a talk on that next week. Puppet directing it's a magic trick. It's always misdirection. There's an added layer of you're hiding something in every shot, whether it's an arm rod. It's mainly 12 people underneath the camera lens, and you know it looks like 3 puppets are walking down the street, and you've got an entire army of techs and rollers and monitors. So part of it is trying to keep all that in mind and then ignore it. In other words, make it just look like, oh, it's the biggest curse of puppet directing. It's a weird little ghetto. People are like, oh, you just do kid shows, right? You just, you know, puppets stand there and talk. You're like, you have no idea. It's like a Star Trek or a Star Wars movie with, it really is a balancing act between art and entertainment and comedy because you want to keep it, you don't want it to get technical for the performers. You want them to ad-lib and so create an environment that's fun, but also so the technical stuff you want to be sort of invisible, not only to the audience, but even to the people once they're in the moment performing.
I imagine it must be an adjustment for a lot of these stars that you have to come and work with Muppets in that way.
Actually, it's funny. That there's a Trek story there. Most actors get it. It's like you look in the puppet's eyes and you just talk with them. But we had Bill Shatner on. So Bill was on with Miss Piggy, and we were doing a riff on the Terror at 40,000 Feet Twilight Zone episode. And he just couldn't get over the puppeteer, like, if I'm Bill and this is Miss Piggy, he just kept looking down at Frank, and it's so weird. It's like, do I look at you? Or, you know, just seemed weird that he seemed very flustered by it. And I think he didn't, the impression I got, and didn't ask him, but he seemed like he didn't want to appear foolish. You know, he didn't want to seem silly. So,
does that sound like William Shatner to you?
I'm having a problem figuring out who William Shatner is.
Oh, okay, well, we'll... We'll talk after.
Wow, it just got shady in
here.
Yeah,
this got a little,
very shady.
Well, you actually won an Emmy for your writing on Muppets Tonight.
Muppets Tonight, yeah, which was, oh, thank you. Wow.
You actually did a Star Trek-themed episode, I love this, where Beaker goes on a Star Trek cruise,
yes,
and George Takei is there.
And I played the nerdy Klingon guest who's like, Captain, whatever, run in and say, with the Battlestar Galactica ship has crashed with our ship and we're sinking. And George is like, well, I guess I'm Captain. And then we had Captain Kangaroo come in and said, sorry, George. That was kind of the subversive thing you were talking about earlier.
This sounds like a weird dream I had once.
It was like all your favorite TV characters coming together and being odd with Muppets.
Did you get to write for Pepe?
I helped create Pepe. He's one of my characters.
He's one of the best characters ever.
Thank you.
What goes into creating a character?
Well, with the Muppets, it's actually pretty complicated because you don't, unlike most television shows or any even movies, you don't, the writer is not king. You have to include not only the character, because they're an established character and franchise, but you need to include the performers. The performers are tied to those characters the way Mike Myers is tied to Austin Powers. You don't bring someone in and go, oh, we got Jim Carrey's going to be Austin Powers now. The only thing I can think of is like Monty Python or an SNL where you have a troupe and you're not just writing characters and we'll cast somebody.
Right.
Like the Hollywood Bowl show, which we just did a couple years ago.
It was so good.
People loved it because we had them as part of it, which was back to the way the original show was. They were very involved in the creation of it, not just like, here's your lines, read it, and flap the doll's lips. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the movies. You were one of the writers on Muppet Treasure Island.
Yes.
What was that gig like?
Well, they had just done, I'd been writing on Dinosaurs and helped create the show Dinosaurs, so that got me my Writers Guild card. Thank you.
Was that for the Guild or for Dinosaurs?
Yeah, WGA solidarity! Yeah. So I had done that, and they had just done a Muppet Christmas Carol, which was very sweet and charming, and I'm like, oh God, I miss the subversive, nutty, weird Muppets. So we were sitting around, like, coming up with ideas, and one of them was Muppets, Knights of the Round Table, King Arthur, and I said, let's do a balls-out, nutty pirate movie. And so our first version of the script was, it started as Treasure Island and ended up like a road picture with giant tiki gods chasing him down the island and you know, the kind of them turning to camera going, this isn't in the book.
By the way, a road picture, not a street picture.
Exactly. Wow. Captain Callback to the rescue.
Thank you.
We started going to production. They brought in James Hart, who was kind of known for adapting classic novels. He had done Coppola's Dracula and he'd done Robert De Niro's Frankenstein. So he came in and he kind of brought it more back to the original book, which I fought against tooth and nail, but he was a successful screenwriter and I was just a weirdo. and then I was on set with Jerry. So we start filming on a Monday. That Friday, he and I are doing the final polish and we had just literally hit save and we were gonna read through one more time. It was like 7 o'clock on a Friday and the script started turning into gibberish. Early days of screenwriting software. The more we looked at it, the more it became literally Greek, like gibberish.
Every writer in the room, their heart just
dropped
as
exactly.
You're talking about this.
Yeah. So we called. We were in London, so we called L.A., or we emailed, I guess, the company and said, your software is eating our script. And they're like, well, send it to us, and we'll at least stop that. And we're like, when can we have it? Oh, Monday morning. We're like, okay. So we just rewrote the whole script. That night.
Really?
We rewrote it in a new file, and because we figured it was corrupted, so and they got us some hacky version of what we'd done, so we just, it was still so fresh in our minds that we just
They
went,
changed
right.
the jokes. They made the jokes
they rewrote
bad.
It, yeah.
The hacky version.
Everyone's got rewrite notes.
That's terrific.
So yeah, that was crazy, and I think Jerry and I went out and had a big drink on Saturday.
Like
we've earned this.
Well, I love these stories. Let's get to the reason that we brought you.
Yes.
As far as our game is concerned, you heard the question that we asked of Danielle. We wanted to know three of the 14 writers who've been credited on the Muppet movies. Helen, what was the first answer that Danielle gave?
Danielle said Jerry Jewell.
That is correct.
That is correct. That's a point for Danielle. What was the second answer that Danielle gave?
Danielle said Jason Segel.
That is correct.
That is correct. Another point. He, of course, co-wrote The Muppets. Jerry Jewell has written a bunch of them. I should mention The Muppet Movie he was a writer on, The Great Muppet Caper, The Muppet Christmas Carol, Treasure Island, as we mentioned as well. And then finally, Helen, what was the third answer that Danielle gave?
Danielle said Lou Grade.
That is incorrect. He was the producer. Yeah, he was the producer who made the original Muppet series.
A producer, but no points there, but still very well, 2 points there. I was surprised to learn that Jim Henson did not write on The Muppet.
Yeah, a lot of people thought he did. Actually, Jack Burns, who was the original head writer on The Muppet series, the first season, wrote it with Jerry. Jack Burns is probably most well-known from the comedy team. Well, I don't know this crowd, but if you're over 55, Burns and Schreiber.
Sure.
And Schreiber, yeah. Jack Burns, actually turns out, because I met him once years ago, I think at Jim's funeral, sadly, but he was the guy they would put on new sitcoms or comedy shows, particularly, and he was like the golden boy. So
I think I remember that.
Yeah, yeah, he was the go-to guy for network comedies.
Right. And, of course, one of the answers very well could have been Mr. Kirk Thatcher.
Sorry.
And Frank Oz did. You said, no, Frank Oz didn't. He actually wrote on Manhattan. He was a writer on Manhattan for the screenplay.
But you still did very well in that. Danielle, is there anything you'd like to ask our expert while we have him here?
Oh, gosh.
Besides Pepe. Deep breaths.
Were you involved at all in the most recent series?
No, I was not.
Okay.
And I take that as a badge of honor. Oh, it got shadier in here again.
Yeah, yeah, no, shady.
I had a lot of friends who worked on it, and, you know, I wanted it to do well because, you know, a high tide raises all boats, but I think they kind of missed, speaking of boats, I think they missed that boat.
Yeah.
But you are still involved with the Muppets. You're working on a Disney Plus series, is that right?
Yeah, the new Disney Plus Muppet stuff that's coming out, I think, in the spring. I did, like, 3 hours of directing on that.
Oh, I know what the question I wanted to ask you is,
yes.
Do you need writers?
Sadly, I ask them that all the time. I do not work for them full time, so I'm a freelancer.
We usually do our networking after the show, during. But I certainly appreciate.
Well, this is why.
If we get a new series, I will, you know, put your name down.
Well, thank you so much for being here. That was really, really cool.
Kirk, if people want to find out more about you or your work,
You can go to my website, www.kirkrthatcher.com, or Instagram, or Facebook, Kirk R. Thatcher.
It's wonderful to have you.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Kirk Thatcher, ladies and gentlemen. Kirk Thatcher. Helen, what is our score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, Danielle Koenig has 7 points and Walter Koenig has 0 points with a round of questions coming up.
That's right. We're going to talk with Walter about a topic he knows about. Plus later, Danielle and Walter will go head-to-head in our Fast Facts round, all to find a winner on Go Fact Yourself.
Video games.
Video games.
Video games. You like them?
Maybe you wish you had more time for them?
Maybe you want to know the best ones to play?
Maybe you want to know what happens to Mario when he dies?
In that case, you should check out Triple Click. It's a brand new podcast about video games.
A podcast about video games? But I don't have time for that.
Sure you do. Once a week, kick back as three video game experts give you everything from critical takes on the hottest new releases
to scoops, interviews, and explanations about how video games work
to fascinating and sometimes weird stories about the games we love.
Triple Click is hosted by me, Kirk Hamilton.
Me, Jason Schreier.
And me, Maddie Myers.
You can find Triple Click wherever you get your podcasts and listen at MaximumFun.org.
Bye.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself, where our score is Danielle Koenig with 7 points and Walter Koenig with 0 points. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. Thanks, everybody. Walter, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about Golden Age superheroes, New York Yankees baseball teams of the 1950s, and Pete Seeger. Let's find out more about each of those. First, you said you know a lot about Golden Age superheroes.
Well, I thought I did. I went to Google and I found out there's about 100 that I never heard of.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what you love. And first of all, what do you consider the Golden Age of superheroes?
Well, 1940s. Okay. 1940s, 1950s, until I stopped reading comics, which was when I was about 12.
Okay.
So it was the Fawcett characters, the Captain Marvel group of characters, and the DC characters, and Superman, Batman, et al.
Who is your favorite?
Actually, there was a character on the radio called either the Hood or the Black Hood, and it was only 15 minutes long. And for some reason, I was totally captivated by this character. And then they actually put him in the comic books. And I was in heaven when I discovered that he was actually in the comic book.
But is that why you wear a black hood tonight?
That's exactly it.
Oh, there he is. Oh! We know the secret identity of the black hood. It's Walter Koenig. All right, Walter, you also said you know a lot about the New York Yankees baseball teams of the 1950s.
Yeah, because I root for the winners, and they were winners throughout most of the 50s. And I started following baseball when I was 11. And it was 1947 Yankees. They won the pennant that year. They lost the next year, but then they won 5 years in a row, from 49 through 54. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a pretty good memory about most of the players.
And were you living in New York at the time?
I was. I grew up in New York.
Did you get to go to games?
I went to a few games. I saw Joe DiMaggio and Yogi Berra hit home runs back to back, which was a big deal in Yankee Stadium.
What part of New York did you grow up in?
I grew up in an area in the northern tip of Manhattan called Inwood.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So it makes sense that you'd be a Yankee fan.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. You also said you know a lot about the singer Pete Seeger.
I know some about him. Pete was an extraordinary man. In my lifetime, he is the man for all seasons. Mm-hmm. He was always the person he represented to be. Humanitarian idealism, and he lived that life. I worked in a settlement house camp in Beacon, New York, right close to where he actually had his home. And every 2 weeks, we'd have a new group of kids come up from the Lower East Side of New York, and he'd come over, and over a campfire, he'd sing songs.
Wow.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It was just amazing.
Wow, I had no idea about that. That's really wonderful to hear. All right, so to summarize, Walter, you said you know a lot about Golden Age superheroes, the New York Yankees baseball teams of the 1950s, and Pete Seeger. Today, we're going to quiz you about New York Yankees baseball teams of the 1950s. Did you have a favorite player of that era?
Absolutely. Joe D.
Joe D, yeah, Joe DiMaggio, sure. Have you ever gotten to meet any players from the Yankees?
No.
Okay.
My mother did. My mother met Joe DiMaggio, and it was under such embarrassing circumstances that she sat next to him on an airplane, and she was eating a sandwich from the delicatessen. And somebody came up and shook his hand, and my mother was chewing, you know, and the roast beef, and she says, "Well, you're a baseball player." And, and he said, "Yeah." He says, "Would you sign this?" And she had a little photo of me, and I was a little on the pudgy side, and he signed the back of it, and I had such extraordinary conflict for years because on the one hand I had Joe DiMaggio's signature. On the other hand, I was this pudgy little guy. I didn't want anybody to see seeing that.
That's got
to
be one of the rarest Joe DiMaggio autographs of all time on a photo of Walter Koenig. All right, well, just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in the topic with a three-part question. Before that, here's a chance for you to show off your knowledge. You got 5 questions with 2 hints if you want it. Danielle, do listen closely because if your father gets any of them wrong, you have a chance to steal. How much do you know about the 1950s Yankees, Danielle?
You know what? All I know is what I learned on Smash. They did a musical about Marilyn Monroe, and Joe DiMaggio was a character.
I'm trying to pull the name of that song, but I can't. It's something only,
I don't know,
only at night or something.
It's Joe DiMaggio. Yes. How do you give up a part like Joe DiMaggio?
Right.
That was the actor.
All right. Well, we'll see if any of his later musical appearances come up on the show. But for now, Walter, here's question number 1. In the 1950s, the Yankees appeared in the World Series 8 times, winning 6 of them and beating 4 different teams. Name one of the teams the Yankees defeated.
Well, I know they defeated the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. They defeated the Brooklyn Dodgers 3 times, in fact. They also beat the Phillies, the Giants, and the Milwaukee Braves.
1950, the Phillies.
Fun fact, during the 1950s, Yankees players won 6 of the AL MVP awards as well. They pretty much dominated that entire decade. Here's question number 2. His real name was Charles, but what was the more commonly used name of the Hall of Fame manager of the Yankees for all of the 1950s?
Casey Stengel.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. I think we may have bored Walter with that question. Casey Stengel, in fact, managed the Yankees from 1949 to 1960, later on managed the Mets. Question number 3. In 1947, the Dodgers and Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, becoming the first African-American player in the majors. It took the Yankees another 8 years to have an African-American player. That man was selected for 3 All-Star teams in the 1950s. Who was he?
Elston Howard.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Elston Howard.
Wow.
Fun fact, he has a monument in Yankee Stadium, Monument Park.
Yeah, and matter of fact, this interesting story was the Yankees were going to bring up a player from Kansas City named Vic Power. They chickened out. They lost the nerve, and they actually traded him to some other team for a Caucasian player. So we were waiting for a long time for the Yankees to do the right thing, and they ultimately did.
Yeah, they did. It's interesting that you think of New York as this bastion of progressive thoughts and diversity, and they still didn't do it right away.
And the interesting thing is that the Boston Red Sox, who were their most heated and hated rival, we're the last team in the American League to bring an African-American on board.
That does not surprise
me. Yeah, I was going to say, that's, yeah. that sounds... That fits the brand.
Yeah, a little bit. All right, you're 3 for 3, Walter. Here's question number 4. There were many players who wore a Yankee uniform in the 1950s who were later inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, but only 2 of them started and ended the decade with the team. Name one of the 2 Hall of Famers who played with the Yankees in both 1950 and 1959.
Whitey Ford.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Whitey Ford. Danielle, I'm sure you knew it was Yogi Berra. Yogi Berra
of course
was there
he did.
The entire time
he did.
As well.
Of course he did.
Walter, you also have a chance to go 5 for 5. Here is the next question. We're recording in a brewery, and this question is about what was once the 3rd largest...
Ballantine Beer.
Brewery in America, and a proud sponsor of the Yankees, Ballantine Beer. The Ballantine logo had 3 rings, each which stood for a quality of the beer. Name any one of the qualities represented by these rings.
You're f***ing kidding me.
You can ask for a hint.
You know, I almost wish I had been a Star Trek fan just so I could have appreciated that moment even more. Walter,
guys,
you do have a...
I am deceased.
Yes.
Walter, you do have a hint available if you'd like the hint.
Okay, give me
Helen, how about that hint?
They were always said in the order of purity, body, and...
Flavor.
Helen?
That is correct!
That is correct! Walter Koenig is 5 for 5.
Wow!
Our first father-daughter competition both went 5 for 5.
Wow! Incredible.
Fun fact, broadcaster Mel Allen would refer to a Yankee home run as a Ballantine blast. Ballantine, by the way, is now owned by Pabst. All right, Walter, you did very well in that round, but now here's your expert-level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. We started this quiz by mentioning that from 1950 to 1959, the Yankees appeared in an astounding 8 World Series, winning 6 of them. During that span, 6 different players started a World Series game for the Yankees at first base. For up to 3 points, name any 3 of them, and we'll give you these clues. One is now in the Hall of Fame, another started at first base in 6 different World Series that decade, and another is the oldest living Yankee player. But again, you can give us any 3 of the 6. Those are just hints for a certain 3.
Moose Gowron.
All right, that's one answer.
Is it good?
We'll tell you after.
Okay, Joe Collins.
All right.
Come on, I should know this.
That's all right. One of them's in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah. Don't know.
Don't know. Okay. Do you want to just name any other Yankee?
Okay. Bobby Shantz.
Okay. Wasn't that fun?
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right. Helen is taking note of your answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Here with us tonight via phone from Fort Worth, Texas, is a man who started at first base for the Yankees in the 1955 World Series and at 98 years old is the oldest living Yankee player. It's Eddie Robinson.
Eddie Robinson. Mr. Robinson, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, it's wonderful to hear you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, I'm happy to be here. He's a knowledgeable baseball fan.
I would say so. It must be pretty nice to hear that a Yankee player thinks that you are pretty knowledgeable about baseball.
I thank you. I appreciate that.
That's great.
Well, he is knowledgeable. And I'm glad I'm happy he was a Yankee fan.
Absolutely. Well, you played for a whole bunch of different teams. I should mention that you were a full 4-time All-Star. You played in 2 World Series. You won one of them with Cleveland. What was it like playing for the Yankees? How did that compare playing for all the other different teams that you played for?
Well, it was wonderful playing for the Yankees. You felt like you were going to win every day, and you did most days. With the Yankees, we won the most games that any Casey Stengel ever won. We won 103 games, and we lost by 8.
That's right, to Cleveland.
We got beat by Cleveland. They won 8 more games than we did and lost 4 straight to the Giants in the World Series.
Wow.
Cleveland won 110 that year.
Well, 110. Well, we won 102 then.
Yeah.
Still not bad. Not bad. I would love if my baseball team won 102 games. I should mention also that you made your Major League Baseball debut in 1942, but you did not play in majors for the next 3 seasons. Tell the people why you didn't play the next 3 seasons.
Well, I was in the Navy. I was in the Navy for 3 years. Came out and went back to Baltimore in the minor leagues in 1946. And 1947 was my initial year full-time in the big leagues.
Wow.
And we won the pennant in 1948. I had a great career in the Yankees, of course, for the highlight of my career. I enjoyed playing with all those guys that were mentioned. Joe DiMaggio was my favorite player. Ted Williams was my favorite hitter. DiMaggio was my best all-around player.
Did you get
I ever played against.
Did you ever get an autograph from Joe DiMaggio on a childhood picture of yours?
No, I didn't.
All right.
What I did, you'll get a kick out of this. When I was with the White Sox, one day this girl showed up, beautiful girl, and she was doing a picture shoot with one of our outfielders, Gus Zernial. Nobody knew who she was, except everybody knew she was very pretty. The next week, after it was over, we kidded Gus about it and all that. But the next week, everybody on the team got a picture, an autographed picture from her. And it was Marilyn Monroe. and my picture was autographed with love to Eddie Marilyn Monroe. But she spelled Eddie, E-D-I. And I stood in the middle of the clubhouse and I said, anybody can't spell Eddie any better than this. I don't want their picture. And I tore it up.
Now, if it were me, I would have just changed my name to Edie.
Well, I thought you'd get a kick out of that story.
I definitely did. You wrote a book about your experience in baseball. It's called Lucky Me.
I did. I wrote a book. It's a good book full of stories called Lucky Me.
The full title is Lucky Me, My 65 Years in Baseball. After your playing career, you worked as a scout and then as a coach in the front office. Now, you were also active in helping get some benefits for union members. What was that about?
What was big in the players' mind when I was playing was they all wanted a pension.
Sure.
And there was no pension. And the pension came about during the time I was playing. But it wasn't much. The older players wanted an increase in their pension.
Sure.
We were required to have 4 years to be vested in the plan. Well, I didn't think that was right. I went on a crusade with Early Wynn and some other players to get an increase for those guys. And we finally did, and about 1,000 of them are getting a pension today. It's not a big pension, but it's a Major League Baseball pension from the time they played in the Major League.
I'm sure that means an awful lot to those players.
It means an awful lot to me that I helped get it.
One of the things I want to ask you about, there's sort of a battle now of baseball fans between those who like advanced statistics, or they call sabermetrics, and those who like traditional statistics. If I'm not mistaken, you were one of the first people to hire someone with the title of sabermetrician.
I did. I hired 10 years before any other sabermetricians were hired. I hired Craig Wright, and he worked for me here in Texas and did some good work. And he did some statistical work. Then I got fired here in Texas and went on to consulting, baseball consulting. Craig moved on to the Dodgers, and I think he worked for San Francisco. Mm-hmm. He became independently wealthy, working for ball clubs, doing what these guys are doing today.
Wow. Now, Helen mentioned in the introduction that you are the oldest living Yankee. You are 98 years old and the oldest living Major League Baseball player. You sound sharp as a tack. I have to ask, what is the secret to having such a long life and to staying so sharp?
Well, I got a damn good wife. That's the secret.
How long have you been married, sir?
We've been married 64 years.
Wow. Now, I should point out that when we asked you about appearing on the show, you were willing to do it as long as it didn't interfere with the Cowboys game.
That's right. I'm a big Cowboys fan. I'm an SMU fan and got beat last night. But Betty and I follow baseball, and we watch the Rangers play every day, every night. And that's an enjoyment in our life. I like to talk baseball with those who know anything about it. That's it. That's what I do.
That's what you do, and you do it very, very well. It's an honor to talk with you. Let's get to the reason that we brought you here as far as our game is concerned. You heard the question that we asked of Walter, who wanted to know, who were the six different players that started a World Series game for the Yankees at first base during the 1950s? Helen, what was the first answer that Walter gave?
Walter said Moose Skowron.
Well, Moose Skowron, of course. Moose and Joe Collins and I were the first basemen. The Yankees had three first basemen in 1954. The year we won the pennant and we lost the World Series to Brooklyn. We were the three, and the three of us, I think, drove in 150 runs. We hit like 45 home runs. That position helped the Yankees win the pennant.
Absolutely. Walter, you wanted to say something?
I remembered another first base.
All right, well, we'll get to that a little later. So that's 1 point for Walter, for Moose Skowron. Helen, what was the second answer that Walter gave?
Walter said Joe Collins.
And Mr. Robinson?
Well, sure, Joe Collins. Joe played outfield and first base, and Moose was only a first baseman.
Yeah, Joe Collins actually started at first base in six different World Series for the Yankees. All right, Helen, and finally, what was the last name that Walter gave as an answer?
Walter said Bobby Shands.
Is that correct? Was he a pitcher? Was he a first baseman, Mr. Robinson?
Bobby Shands was a pitcher.
That was a pitcher. I'm sorry, no point there.
Walter, he was not there when I was there, but he was a really good pitcher.
Yep. Just not that it really matters, but the other answers were Johnny Mize is the Hall of Famer. That's what he was trying to do.
Johnny Mize was a great hitter.
Yes.
I respected him as much as anybody when he had a bat.
Didn't he come from the Cardinals?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. So just to give all of the answers of the people who started at first base in the World Series, it was Johnny Mize, Joe Collins, as we mentioned, Moose Skowron, as we mentioned, Harry Simpson, Elston Howard did start a game in the 1950s, and someone named Mr. Eddie Robinson.
Yay! Thank you very much. Nice visiting
with you. Walter, before we let Mr. Robinson go, is there anything you'd like to ask or say to him?
No, I just think that it's just terrific that you've had such an extraordinary life and that you've had such a terrific career. And that you got the chance to play with all those folks that I grew up, you know, really hero worshiping.
Read my book, Lucky Me.
Okay. You got it.
Once again, Mr. Robinson's book is called Lucky Me, My 65 Years in Baseball. It's available now on Amazon or wherever you get books. What an honor, and I really appreciate you doing this. It's such a pleasure. Mr. Eddie Robinson.
Thank you.
Helen, what is our score at the end of that round?
It is a tie. Yes. Danielle Koenig has 7 points, and Walter Koenig also has 7 points.
All right. It is now time for our final round. We call Fast Facts. I'll read 10 statements, and each contestant will answer with true or false. I'll start with Danielle and alternate between each guest. Each correct answer is worth 1 point. Again, the answer to each statement is true or false. Here we begin. Danielle, 2018 is an even number.
True. That is correct.
Walter, 2018 was last year.
Yes, true.
That is correct.
It gets harder. Danielle, in 2018, the average cost of a new car was about $35,000.
True. Correct.
$35,285, to be exact. Walter, in 2018, the average cost of a gallon of gas was about $2.75.
Okay, true.
That is correct.
Oh, my God. Yes, $2.72, but not in California, obviously. Danielle, in 2018, the average cost of a movie ticket was about $9.
True. Correct.
$9.11. Walter, according to Match.com, in 2018, the average cost of a date was about $60.
Well, dinner, movie, false.
Correct.
There we go. Danielle, in 2018, the average cost of a date was about $40.
True. Incorrect.
Walter, in 2018, the average cost of a date was about $100.
Whoa, we're really going over the top there. I'd say that's false.
Incorrect.
No, according to Match.com, $102.32 was the average cost of a date, not what I'm buying. Danielle, in 2018, the average cost of a wedding was between $30,000 and $35,000.
True. Correct.
Walter, in 2018, the average cost of a divorce was also between $30,000
and $35,000. True.
Correct.
Danielle, I, J.K. Van Stratton, was at your wedding.
True.
Walter, you, Walter Koenig, were at my divorce.
False.
That's right. I have not been divorced or married. Why don't I have $60,000 more than I already do? Let's give a nice hand to both of our guests, Walter Koenig and Danielle Koenig, as Helen tabulates the final score. We're not going to count those last two. Helen, what is our score at the end of the final round?
It is, again, a tie.
Oh, my goodness.
You are so evenly matched.
Very,
at the end of the game, Danielle Koenig has 11 points, and Walter Koenig also has 11 points.
That means we're going to have to go to our tiebreaker. This will determine the winner. Here is your tie-breaking question. Now, the answer is a number. Whoever gets closer to the correct answer wins. We do not play Price is Right style, so no guessing $1. I'm going to ask the question. I'll give you a few moments to think about it. Don't answer right away. Then I'm going to count to three and have you blurt out your answer. Whoever is closer will win. So again, don't answer right away.
So you can go over.
You can go over.
Okay.
As long as you're closest to it.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. According to the official State of Hawaii statistics, how many total islands are in the state? This includes all islands, islets, and atolls. Okay, think about it for a moment. We want to know the total number of all the islands of Hawaii. I'm going to count to three, then say your answer. One, two, three.
50. 35.
It was 50 and
35.
35. The correct answer is 137. That means Walter Koenig, congratulations. You were the facting champion on Go Fact Yourself. Walter, what will you do with your championship?
What?
Very good. All right. That just leaves us to give everyone on the panel a chance to promote any upcoming products, appearances, services, or website. Danielle, where can people hear about you and your work?
Well, I'm not sure when this podcast comes out, but I am writing on the Writers Guild Awards again this year, and it's on February 1st if you want to, you know, crash it. Since it won't be aired.
Excellent. And on Twitter, you're active there?
Oh, yeah. I think it's Danielle B. Koenig on Twitter.
I think so as well.
Yes,
it's wonderful to share the stage with you again, my friend. Danielle Koenig.
Thank you, too.
Walter, you've got a book and some other stuff. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, it's either going to be called Warp Factors, which is what the first book was called. And I've been legislating for beaming up and getting off, but I'm not sure that anybody's going to go for that.
Oh my God, please, please.
But yeah, it's the first book's finished 1979, and then this is from first book again, plus 79 to 2019.
So excellent.
Yeah, and it's about what's happened in my life. I even talk about my family somewhat, my gorgeous, beautiful daughter, my extraordinary, witty, and bright son-in-law, and the amazing Oliver Pardo, and my grandson, and, of course, my beautiful wife, Judy Leavitt.
Excellent. We'll look for that. We thank you so much for joining us. Walter Koenig, get his book wherever you get books. Ladies and gentlemen, you are so lucky because my hosting partner is for you, Ms. Helen Hong.
Yay!
What do you have going on, HH?
You can find my performance calendar at helenhong.com and follow me on the socials at Funny Helen Hong.
She is funny. She is Helen. She is Hong. She is Helen Hong. Helen Hong.
Helen Hong.
Oh, that's not right. She is Helen Hong. There she is. And me, you can find me on Twitter at @J_Keith, on Instagram at jkeith.net, all spelled out. That just leaves me to thank Danielle Koenig, Walter Koenig, Kirk Thatcher, Mr. Eddie Robinson. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, all at GoFactorPod, and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and add to our wiki at GoFactorWiki.fandom.com. I'm J. Keith Van Stratton. Good night. Like what you hear, come see us live. It's free. Go to GoFactorPod.com for our schedule and tickets. And give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, like King Richard III did. He, she, or they said, "So fun. I wish I was some level of famous so I could compete." Thanks, King Richard III. Helen?
Go Fact Yourself is a panel quiz program devised by Jim Newman and J. Keith Van Stratton and comes to you via transcription from the Angel City Brewery in downtown Los Angeles. Questions on Go Fact Yourself were compiled by the Trivia Industrial Complex. It is produced in collaboration with Maximum Fun. Go Fact Yourself's theme song and incidental music were written and performed by Jonathan Green. Maximum Fun's senior producer is Laura Swisher. The show is edited by Julian Burrell. Dave McKeever is our live sound engineer. Special thanks to Ben Lindbergh of the Effectively Wild podcast. C. Paul Rogers III, Diane Firstman, Craig Shemin, Grant Bachoco, Nicole Goldman, Jimmy Pardo, Elliot Hochberg, Ryan Long, David Maddy, Mike Avellanos, Leora Saul, Adam Nediff, Dave Bianchi, Eric Tran, and Christine Vallada. I've been Helen Hong!
Let's go watch Star Trek for the first time!
Or the 2000th time!
Hey,
Hi again, Helen Hong.
Hi again, Jay Keith.
As we mentioned, we recorded this episode last year. We did mention in this episode that baseball great Eddie Robinson is 98 years old and the oldest living Yankee. I'm pleased to report an update. He is now 99 years old and the oldest living former Major League Baseball player from any team.
Wow.
Eddie Robinson, what a great expert he was.
And another reminder to check out our live video stream recording on Tuesday, May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time with guests Ophira Eisenberg and Jonathan Colton. Go to gofactyourpod.com for the link to watch. Click through to KPCC's page and RSVP. You will get a reminder 30 minutes before showtime.
That's it. That's our show for this week. That's our show for next week. Thank you so much again for listening. Take care. Wash your hands. And Helen?
Stay safe out there. Stay sane. And
stay smart. That might be our new catchphrase. Or a hashtag. It's not up to us. Bye, everybody.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.